kept safe. Today's guest is Lynn Hutchins. Say hello, Lynn.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, good. You're good volume. Perfect.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks you for coming. More about you in a minute. So the format of the show today will be slightly different. We're only going to talk about one quick news item that may lead us into a little discussion about corporations and sustainability and stuff like that. And then we'll get time to get to know you, you know, the audience gets to know you and some of your entrepreneurial work. And as always, I'll end the show with some historical perspective. So today I'll give you a rundown of some of the discoveries in the science of climate change. Mm-hmm. Most people think that climate change science started in maybe the 70s or 80s, but it actually goes all the way back 120 years.
Wow.
In fact, you'll learn about where we learned the term greenhouse gas actually goes back over 100 years.
Okay.
So we'll do that at the end. But first, you have to do a commercial and the weather, and we'll be right back.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterd In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterd In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Okay, we're back. The weather, let's see. It looks like it's going to be stormy. Again, it seems like every show I've done, it's been thunderstorm. It's almost like the exact same weather the last 5 weeks in a row. It's like I can look out this window and there's threatening clouds, threatening storms. It's like every week. It's like a repeat.
Hail.
It's going to be 90, you know, tomorrow. But I think looking at the forecast further out, again, you know, if you're watching this probably Thursday or Friday, okay. Hopefully the weather's a lot cooler by then. They're talking maybe 79, 80 is the high.
Nice.
This week. So that'll be fun. So one more commercial and we're ready to go.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Okay, we're back. So I think what we'll do is first we'll introduce Lynn so everybody gets to know who she is. She sent me a nice little bio to read. So Lynn Hutchins is a consummate entrepreneur. She sees the world from a unique perspective, and this enables her to connect with people, experiences, and opportunities from an expanded viewpoint. Her deep respect and love for humanity helps her to help others in identifying, honoring, articulating, and evolving their value in the world. Professionally speaking, these talents have manifested in a myriad of iterations and arenas. Whether it be running her own successful businesses, representing artists and selling art, coordinating events, marketing, promoting for numerous companies in a variety of industries, or developing environmentally conscious technology platforms that have potential to change the world, Lynn's depth of insight serves to illuminate the breadth of beauty and goodness that exists in all. Wow, that's a mouthful.
See, that's so what happens when your mother writes your bio.
Oh, okay. That's good stuff.
I'm kidding.
I was actually impressed I was able to get all the syllables in.
Right?
It's not like she owns a company, she runs a company, and she sells stuff.
I do it all, really. You know, but who doesn't, though? We all wear many hats.
Yeah, but yeah. You know what it is? It's definitely people who are, I mean, I'm a lot older than you, I imagine, and no. I imagine... Well, then I look a lot older than you, put it that way. I guess I wear a few hats too, but it just seems like the younger generation too is just coming up, like, you know, my own kids and, you know, other people like Cody and, you know, that are in this Hack Hunterd In meetup. They're all doing like 7 different things at one time, and it's amazing. I guess I probably did that when I was younger. It's just, you know, the perspective as you get older to realize, you know, maybe I did do a lot of that stuff when I was younger.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So it is interesting, but also you have that theme of the globalism. It's not just out to make money for yourself per se.
Right.
It's about involving other people. So that segues perfectly into this. If you didn't notice it in the news, Lynn and I were discussing this briefly, before the show, is that there's a group called the Business Roundtable. Okay. And they make up of you know, 200 of the largest companies in the world. And we're talking the Apples and, you know, Exxons and Walmarts of the world. And they do this conference, I guess, every year, and they talk about, you know, the economy or their growth goals or, you know, where they see the world and things like that. And for the first time ever, they came out with this statement about what the purpose of a corporation is. Hmm. You know, up until this statement, you know, corporations, just like my company and stuff that you've done, I mean, the primary goal of any for-profit company is to make money.
Exactly.
You know, and, you know, at the expense of a lot of things, you know, and the environment, the, you know, the workers' rights. I mean, over the years, it's evolved where, you know, companies have the bad rap because of this profit supersedes every other, you know, business goal. And so they start looking at this and realizing that, you know, this isn't finally the way corporations should be. So their statement, I'll read it real quick. It's, Americans deserve an economy that allows each person to succeed through hard work and creativity and to lead a life of meaning and dignity. We believe the free market system is the best means of generating goods, a strong, sustainable economy, innovation, a healthy environment, and economic opportunity for all. Then they talk about, you know, the vital role that we do, creating jobs, services, yada, yada. And then it gets into, while each of our individual companies serves its own corporate purpose, we share a fundamental commitment to all our stakeholders. We commit to delivering value to our customers. We will further the tradition of American companies leading the way in meeting or exceeding customers' expectations, investing in our employees. That starts with compensating them fairly and providing important benefits, including supporting them through training and education and helping them develop new skills. We foster diversity and inclusion, dignity and respect, dealing fairly and ethically with our suppliers. We're dedicated to serving as good partners to other companies, large and small, that help us meet our missions. And I want to stop there real quick because one thing I noticed as a small business owner myself, there are companies like PSE&G is an example, or Rutgers does it as a, you know, they're a large university, but they're in effect a company
right.
that needs suppliers. They actually hold fairs for the small business people to come
in. Oh, wow.
So okay. they call them supplier diversity days. Mm-hmm. So even they're not necessarily talking about like minority-owned businesses, right. but they're talking about small businesses because they see the value of having, you know, instead of having a national contract for right. cleaning their offices, if you deal with the local company,
right.
you know you're going to get more dedicated people. You're going to get people who are trying to work harder for you. And in the end, sometimes it is cheaper.
Right.
Right. You know, I think it was PSE. I can't remember which company it was. They did the example, too, about like getting service for their vehicles, for their fleet vehicles.
Right.
And they were using like a national chain, and they found that the cost was more because the chain wasn't always located where their facilities were.
Right.
And so it was cheaper to go to the local guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and he usually got it done faster, and you didn't have to compete with all the other right. you know, retail customers.
And a lot of times there, it's going to make a point about yeah. that, is it is about price. And if it's about the lowest qualified bidder, you know, you're looking at an opportunity where there may not be the best job that's being done, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think local is always a better route.
Right. And so the other thing is about supporting the communities in which we work. We respect the people in our communities and protect the environment by embracing sustainable practices across our businesses, generating long-term value for our shareholders who provide the capital that allows the companies to grow and invest. We're committed to transparency and effective engagement with our shareholders. So none of these things said necessarily we're here to make the most money we can, you know, is right. the point that they're making. And so I went on their website. There's it's a business roundtable, and I brought it up on my phone here. They have a whole section on innovation, since this show is about innovation.
Okay.
So they have, I'll show you, it's kind of hard to print out, so I had to bring the phone because it's very graphical. But they have, you know, the Innovation Nation. So their agenda for next year would be fivefold. Hmm. One would be to invest in people.
Right.
Invest in science and technology. Mm-hmm. Remove roadblocks to innovation. Mm-hmm. Position America to compete. And pursue more inclusive innovation.
Wow.
So if you drill down through each one, like as an example for invest in people, you scroll down and they describe, you know, some issues. You know, that in 2016, there were 13 job openings for each available worker in STEM professions.
Right.
So we obviously need more STEM professionals.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and then they talk about, you know, the issues, but then they go down to what they think are some of the recommended solutions. So, like, they have increased training, shorten the pathway to jobs for individuals with recognized skills,
yep.
Align education with the job opportunities, invest in the foundational skills that you need. Mm-hmm. You know, basic stuff, expand apprenticeships, which is something I got involved with.
Right.
That's also very big. And then, like, for investing in the technology, it's the same thing. You know, that's kind of obvious what they mean. You know,
mm-hmm.
obviously we got to have, you know, companies have to have the latest and greatest technology to thrive.
Exactly. Technology.
And then the one that I thought was interesting, too, is remove roadblocks to innovation.
Hmm.
Okay. So they're saying that. And it's more than just, okay, you know, the EPA prevents us from innovating, you know, or the FDA prevents us from innovating. It's not necessarily that we're over-regulating. It's more there's a couple of things they point out. One is how long it takes to make a rule.
Right.
So the rulemaking right. process took on average 18 months.
Oh, wow. Over a year.
In this country yeah. to make a rule on any particular type of, you know, how you should, you know, the water regulations or, that's pretty loud. The computer just said, hey, we want to say hello.
Oh, hello.
It took an average 18 months.
Yeah.
Now that's the same amount of time that Moore's law says that it takes to double the number of transistors that could fit on a computer chip. Right. So
yeah.
as technology is yeah. increasing,
it's still,
it leaps a generation.
Yeah.
But then the law now finally yep. caught up to the previous yep. generation.
Exactly.
And so that's the one thing is that, you know, it's that it takes too long to create
yeah.
these regulations.
Yeah. How can we, I mean, that's probably been an issue since the beginning of, you know, time, I would say. That's an exaggeration. Yeah. But how can we help those processes flow better?
Well, I think one of the things is we should review, like it used to be, that governments would review old laws and get rid of old laws and conflicts and loopholes.
Right.
But because lobbyists are now, like, they're using loopholes to live through their
right.
you know, bring their companies
yeah.
through, it's like, that's part of the problem, is that we don't, when we create a new regulation, we don't look at the old regulations and then make them fit properly. You know,
right.
There's always this, you know, the red, especially like in New Jersey, and all the East Coast states, because you have laws that have been made for 200, even 300 years
right.
that are still in on paper. You know, the local Patterson or Flemington, I mean, has been around
right.
before the country started. So I'm sure there's some old laws
oh, sure.
you can dig up, and there's just that history of that.
Yeah.
Whereas the West Coast, they don't have the same length of
right.
history, so they're
exactly.
able to, you know, make stuff. But the one thing is, and I know I read an article, one of my shows I did where the in Europe they do this, is to create a regulatory sandbox.
Okay.
Meaning, like, just like you do when you're coding,
mm-hmm.
you have, like, a development server, and
okay.
you have your production server.
Gotcha.
And so the development server is where you can try out these things
right. testing
in the same environment.
Right.
And that's something we don't really do as a country. We don't do testing of our laws.
Huh.
Like, hey, why don't we
that's
set up the
true.
Law,
huh.
put it in yes. Flemington, and
right.
see what
right.
happens.
Small town. Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah.
and just and report back and say, okay,
right.
in a year we'll look and see
and expand.
What was the effect of having
or
this
not.
Law or have it in some virtual way. There's got to be a way mm-hmm. to model. You know, just we don't
yeah.
spend that effort.
Well, there you go.
So that's also something they talked about.
Yeah.
And also to promote innovation in government. You know, just that,
mm.
you know, the private sector innovates, but not necessarily the government.
Right.
You know, you can tell by their computer systems and things like that, right?
Yeah.
So... Continuing real quick, let's see. Let's set our first break here. Okay, so for competitiveness, you know, the common ones are that they talk about that I've heard before too is combating intellectual property theft. Obviously, that's a big thing.
That's a big thing. Always
you know,
has been.
With other countries.
Yep.
Partnering with like-minded countries to counter technology restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Enforcing the technology restriction, you know, the
mm-hmm.
the proprietary laws and security. I mean, like cybersecurity, things like that. Let's see. And just export controls. Obviously, the way the tariff war has been crazy. Right. And I've said stuff about it publicly at the state house level, but I haven't really talked about it much here. But, yeah, that's definitely hurting innovation. You know, if you're worried about what partner you can work with overseas because now it's 20% more money to deal with them.
Right. That's something that has to be considered. Yeah.
And then the last thing they talk about is pursuing inclusive innovation. And, you know, women only make up 22% of the STEM workforce.
Wow. That's a small percentage.
You know, an estimated 13 to 54 million workers may need to switch into new occupational fields by 2030.
Hmm.
You know, so it's not just, you know, the fact that rural America lacks access to the internet, technology, transportation, all those things.
Right.
They said only 43% of rural adults have a tablet. Only 67% of them have a smartphone. And only 70% of them have a computer.
So what's happening with the balance of the people? They just don't
have it.
Do they choose that, you think? Or is it more about, you know, affordability? Or is it access?
Well, part of it is access. I've seen this on other programs talk about it in the long form, you know, that there is issues with having access. I mean, just living in Frenchtown, you probably have that issue, right? I mean, as a business in Frenchtown, right, the first thing I did when I came here is like I looked at the internet and I said, all right, why is the internet, our speeds were like, you know, five megabytes or something.
Right.
And I was like, this is barely enough to do anything,
right?
Let alone send an email, right? So I contacted Comcast because that's what I used in my house.
Right.
And they're like, we don't come there. So then I called Verizon. We don't come out there.
No.
And then so it's just Service Electric or CenturyLink.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are your only two choices. And neither of them, I mean, Service Electric has probably the best internet. Right. Better of the two. Better but it's not the best.
No, it's not Verizon.
And it's not business level internet. I mean, if we did more than what we actually do, I would think, you know, if I was an IT company, I would think it would be pretty hard. Our neighbor across Group 12 is Integrated Clinical, and he had to pay to have his own high speed internet put in. Well, so he had to pay probably $40,000 to $50,000
easily,
to do that. So
absolutely,
that's what's happening in the rural is that you know you just don't have that access, so you have no choice.
Right.
So why would you get a smartphone if you don't get reception for
Makes
a smartphone?
Sense. Yeah.
So I think that's part of it.
You
know, even I know when we go down to like the shore, the internet, the wireless, the phone the data. Levels are pretty hard.
Right.
You know, sometimes you're in spots where you just can't connect.
Can't connect.
So, and those people who live there all the time, and what are they doing? You know, some people, you know, they live and they expect everything to be, you know, 4G LTE speeds all the time.
Right.
And it's not the way it is around the country. So,
well, what kind of solutions you think are out there for that? I guess they're.
Well, the government has to get involved, just like they did with the phone companies in the 1900s.
Right.
You know, the government's got to come out and say, you will have this high-speed internet.
Right.
You know, bring Google, bring somebody out there.
Mm-hmm.
The fiber is already there. Just bring it out there.
Right, right.
You know, even if it has to be government, you know, covered. So, all right, we're up at our first break. So we'll take a quick commercial break, and then we'll get back into more what Lynn's doing these days.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay, we're back. I'll put the headphones on so I know when to speak into the microphone. So we're back here with Lynn Hutchins. And we were talking about, innovation and corporate responsibility. But I think we're going to shift down to the small world of our businesses here. So
small,
yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Like I met her through the Hack Hunterdon meetup.
Yeah.
You're interested in that because
technology. I mean, I was around when the internet started in the 90s. I was involved with some of the first websites that were created. I'm from New York, so that's okay. Where I was in business with some partners there, and we created some pretty amazing websites backed by PHP and ASP.NET, and then fast forward to today where we are, we have blockchain technology and we have all sorts of programming happening that is high level and beyond anything I could have even imagined back then.
So what was can you say which website you worked on back then?
Oh, God. I don't know if I can, actually. I don't know if they're still in business, actually. I think it was actually I want to say it was a dentist.
Okay.
Not like a typical dentist. It was more like implants.
Like
He was definitely ahead of his time. We actually created a website that looked like an iPhone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The first iPhone. And it was amazing. The front end of that site was highly functional. I mean, it was, we used a lot of flash animation. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that's...
Yeah, they still have...
They're still using flash animation?
I just saw actually a pop-up because I think I saw it on... one of my employees had a website up there where she was showing me, and then... There was a pop-up that came up that said Flash is no longer supported by Chrome in 2020.
Really?
Yeah, is what it said.
So I guess, even back then it had its issues. The speed of the internet was nowhere near what it is today. Yeah. So we had our issues there, but we worked around it. They were beautiful sites. We got plenty of compliments and plenty of work out of it. Worked with a lot of developers overseas because it was just less expensive.
Yeah.
India, and then I was the liaison between the programmer and the client who would speak about the functionality that they wanted with these websites, and I would then speak to the developer in India and explain that to them, and then they would come back, and then we would test it, and it was interesting because there was a certain point where I was able to actually read code because I understood where the mistakes were after a period of time.
So you didn't have computer training before?
No,
that.
Not at all. That's sales.
So you were more of a sales marketing person.
Yeah, sales and marketing. And, I love people. So, I was always that person between the two, and loved it.
But you also were doing the other stuff with art? And
yes. Well, I went to school for art. I was a graphic design major. But that's something I knew early on that I didn't want to do professionally. I knew I'm just way too outgoing, and I didn't want to sit behind a desk, and create art for a business for someone else. I'd rather do that for myself. Mm-hmm.
So it's more a passion than it is necessarily an avocation.
Right. And I am an artist still to this day. I still paint and mm-hmm. such. So, but it's more on my terms when I want to, not necessarily because there's a deadline and someone needs it for their, advertisement. So, So I early on knew that I was meant to be the face of something, even if it's for my own company or another company representing a product or service. And, you know, it's still to this day, I feel like I have more to offer, you know, as far as ideas and solutions and being able to speak to someone who can now create that solution in a form that's supported by technology. Mm-hmm. Because I feel the technology is, it's bringing us together in more ways than one, which I think is the best, the most awesome part about it.
It's good. So, yeah. So in the art world, so you're involved with some artists. You represent artists. Is that correct?
I have represented artists. I do when it comes to certain events. I don't represent them related to management as I did in the years past, which I was enjoyed immensely, which gave me a lot of experience working with high-level clients. Mm-hmm. That was, everything I've done, it's funny, I look at my life and I'm like, wow, what else is next? I've done so much. I kind of dabbled a little bit in everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready for the next phase of innovation, which I feel is like blockchain technology. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that after the next break.
Sure, sure.
I just want to fill in your background a little bit so people know who you are.
Oh, yeah. And I think most people in this area know, and in New York, know me for curating events. Mm-hmm. I'm an event coordinator. I collaborate with businesses and organizations to create experiences for, for their guests. And that's been...
Yeah, my wife and I almost went to the one party with the
medieval theme,
That sounded pretty cool, but it just didn't work out with our schedule because we had a really early day the next day.
That was an amazing event. We had a belly dancer who came with a 6-foot long boa snake. And then we had another dancer that she walked on glass, and then she had someone walk on her back, and it was amazing. We had a magician.
So it was like an old school burlesque kind of vaudeville type.
It was awesome. Yeah.
And people were dressed up too, right?
Everyone was dressed in medieval themed costumes.
So it was sort of like a Game of Thrones kind of party.
Well, I wouldn't say that word, but I would say medieval.
You can't.
I would
Some
say
copyright issue.
I would say medieval. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about. What is that you just said?
Okay. It's kind of like when people advertise Super Bowl parties. They call them big game parties.
Yeah. It's
Okay. I see.
I don't. Yeah.
It was a party to represent the time of.
Medieval times.
Oh, but you can't say
medieval. You can't even say medieval times. Well, did I say that?
The time during the medieval ages.
There you have it, yeah.
That's funny.
But it was an amazing event. I do want to mention the place that I had that event. Okay. It's in Oscar, if that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a place called Hopscotch in Doylestown, and it's actually a really amazing. They do a lot of events there, even that aren't coordinated by me, and I think it's an awesome place
How did you get into that as a business idea? I mean, is it something that you worked for somebody first and then got the hang of it, or you just...
No, I always wanted to... I'm just like parties.
Do you remember your first party that you threw?
Yeah.
Where you got paid? I'm sure you...
Well, it's about paying yourself, actually. Yeah. You know, it's... it was in New York, and actually my first event period was an art event. There was no budget, so I had to figure out a way to have food, alcohol, some form of entertainment. The artist, of course, had already had the venue, so the art was already there. And the artist, by the way, I want to mention who she is. Her name is Erica Rachel. We had this event in Soho in New York. Okay. It's a beautiful venue. And it was the most amazing event that I ever, and I knew at that point, you know, it's almost like the defining moment when you know this is what I'm supposed to be doing, you know?
Yeah.
So, we had, I was able to get a food sponsor. We had, Barefoot Wine and Bubbly that, sponsored that event with the alcohol. Oh. We had, I had an entertainer who I actually found from a New York City subway, believe it or not.
Busking on the subway.
He was. I was like, "Hey, can you
put
do
your
this
business
event?
Card in his bucket?"
I literally gave him my and he called and he said, "Yeah, I'll do it." And he came. I paid him, and it was great. We had a great turnout, and it was an amazing event. And that's when I knew that's what I knew. I was like,
oh, wow.
That's what I'm, you know, and I do a lot of emceeing too. So I like being in front of the mic. I've done a lot of that work as well. So,
okay.
Both here and in New York. So.
As in music emceeing or emceeing as in running event MC?
Well, MC as in, not music. You're thinking okay. like rap music. No, yeah. not that kind
just,
of MC.
Just asking.
Although, hey, who knows what I'm going to do yeah. next, right? More like running an event. Yeah, okay. yeah, definitely. The master of ceremonies really is what I look at it as. So.
You know, because I'm in the music world a little bit. So
right.
That's why
so he's an MC. Like, you want me to start busting out some yeah. I love it. No. But it's,
my son's record player here, he's got into vinyl, so he's...
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He's definitely getting into all the old stuff.
He's learning how to scratch, too.
No, he's not doing that. No. Because I think he doesn't have one of those, but he's more the vinyl. We have to get him to learn the vinyl first.
And then he can get a little he'll start, fancy. You
know, and then he's actually going to come up with some rhymes, too.
Right, really? Oh, my God. You got to get him on your show here.
Well, we'll see. And he's a budding filmmaker, so we'll see.
Oh, right. You mentioned that.
Yeah,
mentioned
so that. We'll see. Maybe... after he's just starting college in a week, so
oh wow, congratulations!
To do that, so it's
what college?
Montclair University.
Oh yeah, I know Montclair.
Yeah, it's a pretty good film program there.
Great.
So
great.
We're pretty excited about it. I'm pretty jealous of his schedule, though. It's like history of film and how to write screenplays and all that.
Right?
Fun
Doesn't
stuff
it seem like
that.
School
like I wish
is
that
fun?
Was a major when I was.
I know, right?
I mean, we didn't have that. We had intro to chemistry, math. Science, you know, it's very straightforward, you know.
All the things you're never really going to use.
Memorize stuff. I mean, I use it, so I can't complain.
Right.
And I do apply it, but it's, you know, I did learn a lot in college. Like, we had a discussion at the last Hack Hunter to meet up. You weren't at, I was talking to some of the other people. We were talking about college, how it may not be needed in 20 years.
True.
Because of things like what this group is doing, you know, with training and maybe apprentice. Ships is the way most jobs are going to be filled and things like that. But I was saying about all this, I started reflecting on the things I learned in college, and it's like, wow, I did learn how to think critically. I did learn how these kind of not necessarily memorize, you know, I knew, you know, the boiling point of water, but I don't, but I also know how to derive the boiling point of water.
Right.
And that's what I learned in college. So I think that's important too.
Yeah, agreed.
Let me just double check what time. Well, we're. At another break already. Wow.
Oh.
See, time. I told you time
when
flies.
When you're having fun, yeah.
Real quick. you know what it is? We'll do a shortened version of it. I won't even do the news part because that's optional. So you know what? Why don't we just skip it then?
All righty.
Because it is optional, according to my official manual here
awesome.
In front of me. So let's just keep going.
Okay.
Because it's just news. And
well, who needs that?
People are watching this
news
3 days later. The news is already old anyway.
It's done. So. It's new news. And we're behind at that point. Yeah.
So so let's continue. So again, here with Lynn Hutchins to reset what we're doing. And we're talking about her work and kind of the history of her professional life as she's gotten through different things. So you've done the party planning, event coordination, those kind of thing. You're still doing that work, right?
Yes, absolutely. I have it's not my event, but I am working with and collaborating with, I should say, Michael Arandella, who is the founder of the Jazz Age Lawn Party that happens every year and has been happening now for 15 years at Governor's Island in New York. Mm-hmm. That's happening on the 24th and the 25th this weekend. If you can get there. It's a family event. So, and it's going to be a beautiful weekend, by the way. So
yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah, the event starts at noon, ends at 6, so might be something you might want to do, actually.
Yeah, I did look it up. It is interesting. It's you come dressed in your 20s attire.
1920s,
bring a picnic lunch. They have some food that's going to be there, right?
Yeah.
And some alcohol.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to bring alcohol there,
nope,
so very important.
Absolutely
not. Yeah. I read some of the rules because you were telling me some of the rules for Governor's Island.
Yeah, it's...
So why don't you explain some of that, the sustainability stuff. And
zero waste. Well, the zero waste policy that they have is you know, because Governor's Island is part of New York City. And New York City is striving to have a zero waste by, I want to say, 2030. Yeah, 2030. So for a city to be able to do that is an amazing feat. It's not a very long time to become zero waste. So, and that usually means, you know, things that are washable, reusable. They can't be no plastics by any means. Mm-hmm. You know, things that are, you know, that can be disposed of in a conscious way. So, or you reuse,
or meaning recycled, or you know melted down and then reused it for another purpose.
Exactly. So that type of recycle, but not what our traditional recycling means, which is interesting because I don't know how many. I mean, you might know this. How many other states have reached this? Is it maybe California?
I don't know. I don't think that. You mean as far as zero
waste? Yeah.
No,
there's nobody, right? So New York might be the first.
Yeah. I know San Francisco usually leads in this stuff. They ban plastic bags.
Yeah.
They ban the straws.
Yeah.
So those kind of things, but there's not zero waste.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the one company that always advertises is Subaru.
Ah.
They have a zero waste.
Yeah.
Factory.
Oh, okay.
You know, I've seen that advertised, but okay. I'm not aware of any.
Yeah.
City. I mean, maybe in Europe there's some small. Cities,
yeah.
I know they're definitely in Europe. They're big on that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we definitely need to catch up on those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's interesting that it's New York. When, from what I understand, it was New Jersey that actually started the recycling, if you want to call it mandate, if you will. So that was like back in the 80s, from what I recall, as far as what I looked up. But yeah, I think it's great that New York is leading the charge on this. And, yeah, Governor's Island is very strict with their policy. And being an event coordinator, it's you have to know these things as it relates to who you're bringing on board as far as your vendors, because they have to be aware.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in some cases for vendors, it doesn't pay for them to do certain events if it requires that in certain locations. So it's important to know some of the, you know, laws and regulations of the local, you know, wherever you're holding your event, so that when you're hiring your talent and you're hiring, you know, or bringing in a catering company, that they, you know, who to reach out to, what companies, or if you're reaching out to a company that you normally work with, to let them know, hey, this is an opportunity. However, this is a criteria that is there as it relates to sustainability and such.
So this is going to be true. So not just because this is an island, but all the other New York venues are going to be the same.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Same issue. So if you're parting it, you're planning an event anywhere else in the city, you're going to have to worry about this stuff.
Well, at least know about it. Know about worry, but at least know about it.
And plan for it.
Yeah, and plan about it for it. Yeah. Yeah, which is really interesting. It was a really aggressive, I think it's definitely something to follow suit with if other states would like to. What I'd love to see is a federal, I mean, these are all state level things. So I think that we'll know when we're really there. As it relates to this, if the federal government decides to say, hey, you have to do this, and it's for our own good, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the problem the way the federal government, the way our government's structured is it's very hard for them to mandate a lot of things universally. Like even like the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit is the one that popped in my head.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The way they were able to mandate that is because they had highway dollars attached to it.
Okay.
So what they do is they usually put money out. That's the only way they get. Like, even, like, I was involved with voting machines and elections.
All right.
And so there are no federal elections. All elections are state elections, except for Congress.
Uh-huh.
And so when they were funding the voting machines back in after 2000, they were making the law, basically, they had to say, all right, for electing a congressman, you have to use this piece of equipment.
Uh-huh.
And so we'll fund it. But they didn't say you had to vote for governor, for your local dog catcher, you know, using this. You could use any machine you want, but you have to. But who's going to have two sets of machines?
Right.
So
true.
They use those kind of carrot, you know, methods of getting change to happen. So I don't know as far as, you know, the problem with the environmental stuff is like, how do you give somebody money for not making mess? Right,
it's like what you do with your kids. Like, okay, you'll get allowance if you clean your room.
Yeah, but it's like, well, what kind of allowance? It's like, do you do it as a highway thing? Is it a housing thing?
True.
Is it a tax break? I mean, how do you even enforce that?
True.
So it's like, you know, the only thing you can do is on the larger scale stuff with the, you know, like the carbon emissions, things like that, because that's already every state's regulating that anyway.
Right. True.
But trash, I don't know, that's a tough one because I think part of it is we also have to have the systems. It's like kind of this business group that I was talking about.
Right.
It's, you know, it's fine to say all that stuff, but how are you going to do it if we have no, like right now, China won't take our recyclable trash to process because they were the ones that were processing it.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was too dirty coming over, we weren't rinsing out our cups and things.
Right.
they're not taking it anymore. So a lot of recycled waste right now just gets put in a landfill.
Wow.
Because of that. So it's like we need both sides of that solution. So I don't know how New York's going to be able to do the zero waste when they're, you know, what are they going to do with all the other recyclable stuff?
Right. I'm sure there's a plan. I mean, I only gave half, not even half the story. It's like a snippet of the story, so I'm sure there's more information.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like you have to think of all those things. So let's see. So we have about maybe 10 more minutes left.
Aww.
I know, it's, like I said, it gets really fast. So let's see. What else? Let's see. I was trying to think of another subject we can hit really quick. I mean, you did mention the art world. I mean, I'm fond of it too, from the you know, music, and then also, like, my wife and I like to go to art galleries and things, especially smaller, you know, almost like co-op kind of places.
Yeah,
but, we go down to Delaware a lot, and did the sound just change?
Yeah, and one.
That's weird.
One ear, but as long as you're.
Well, that's weird. Something changed here in our system here.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Maybe one of these cables came loose, but...
I don't know how that would be possible.
I didn't touch anything. So, hopefully if you can hear us...
Yeah, hopefully. If
it'll
not,
be in mono as well. Yeah,
exactly.
Sound like.
Not
that
stereo.
Was
yeah. Right ear for me. I don't know. Maybe left for you right now.
Yeah, it is the left ear for
it's
me.
It's right for me.
That is the weirdest thing. I don't know. One of these cables got loose or something.
Yeah, maybe just... wait. I think I hear... No, it's not coming back.
Oh, it did come back for
a little
me.
Bit, right?
Yeah. All right. Well,
maybe. All right. Well,
that's the fun of running your own show by yourself. You know,
there you go.
Get to be the engineer. All right. So let's talk about art. So
yes.
So you were saying that are you still represent any artists or no? You stopped doing it?
No. What I'll do is if I have an event and there are going to be artists or an artist that is going to be showing their work, you know, I create an opportunity for them to show their work and I'll curate the event. And in exchange, a percentage of the sales will go to me. So for that event, yeah, I'm sort of managing them because if there are any opportunities to negotiate with a client or someone who's interested in a painting or even any after talks that happen after the event, then I would be that person that would do that. So it's kind of like per event.
Do you have any fun stories anymore with trying to sell somebody a picture that they did or a painting or a piece of work that like you go, wait a minute, either that surprised you, like, oh my gosh, that person bought that?
Yeah.
Or... you know, I couldn't believe I was able to sell them that.
Because, you know...
Maybe I'll tell you one that... I'll let you think about that.
All right, go ahead.
I'll tell you ours real quick. Yeah, yeah. So there's this gallery in Bethany that my wife and I go to, and so they have these, like, wine things every month, you know, and we don't usually generally get to go to them, but we happened to be in town when they were doing these little, like, you get to meet the artists, and they have, like, five or six artists. And then some sculptors and some people do other 3D art that are there. And the owner, we got to know Rena, and she did this really cool like collage. And then she painted like this pink flamingo over the collage.
Right.
And, you know, we liked it, but, you know, we weren't going to buy the original. We were maybe looking at buying a print or something just for the value of the cost. But it was just – and then there was this other couple there, and they were like – watching us negotiate with ourselves about whether we're going to buy this original thing.
Really?
And yeah, you know, and it was, and we were literally there for 2 hours deciding this. It was back and forth, and this couple wouldn't leave because they wanted to see if we bought it or not.
Are you serious?
And we became like the show for them.
You were the show for them.
It was so funny, and we ended up buying it. So,
thank God, because
I'll have to find a picture of it. I'll send it to you so you can see what it was.
It must be a beautiful painting. Or what was the?
It just worked out because the pink. We have a pink living room that it just, it's not in the living room, but it's outside of it. So you see it, it kind of makes the pink pop out.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. Just like, I mean, why does anybody like any particular art, right?
You got to connect with it.
I mean, it's because I knew part of it for us is knowing the fun of the art part of it, especially going to these small places, is meeting the artist.
Yeah.
Hearing them, what they were doing, how they make this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went to another one just recently, this guy David Simpson, who I should...
Oh, yeah.
The ones I sent
Beautiful
you.
Work, yeah.
So he, you know, he actually spent time with us and walked us through the entire gallery of other people's work because he knows them all.
Right.
And just said, okay, this person does this.
Huh.
This person does it with light. This person does it with color.
Right.
You know, and like it was like having your own personal tour guide.
That's awesome.
Better than you would have like a recording of a place because it's like interactive.
Right.
So that's the fun of it for us.
Yeah.
But I mean, could you think of something?
Oh, I have a story. Yeah. Well, inside the mind of an artist, actually everyone wants to know what goes on with a full-time artist. It's how are they doing it and why? But I do have a story.
Yeah.
And I'll keep it semi-general because I don't want to say people's
names.
That's
right.
Okay.
We'll keep the innocent. Being hurt.
Oh, so back in like, I think it was 20, it was like 2015, I think it was, or so. I guess the year doesn't matter. Yeah. But for the most part, it's when I think Bitcoin was about $700 a coin, which now I think it's about 10,000, maybe 11,000 a coin. And a gentleman came to one of my artist's exhibitions in New York, it was in Soho, and he was talking to us about Bitcoin. I had no idea what Bitcoin was. And he said, I have this idea for your artist related to Bitcoin. And so he said, let me take you out to dinner and we'll talk about it. So it turns out he's a programmer. Apparently he creates, you know, solutions using blockchain technology. Some people think this person, by the way, is the person who had created Bitcoin, which if you met him, you'd be like, that would be the funniest joke ever, which it could be. Who knows, right? But anyway, long story short, he wanted us to take one of my artist paintings, and he was going to like have it in a vault somewhere, if you will. I guess it was. We didn't really quite get to that point because we decided not to go through with the deal, and disperse $100,000 in Bitcoin and have people buy the coin that was specific to this painting. So he would name it something.
Oh, so there'd be like a name for the coin.
But it's Bitcoin. It was Bitcoin, yeah. And then, so that no one person could own this one painting. So everyone would have a piece of this painting.
Oh, that's wild.
So
it's almost like it's fractional. Yeah. It's almost like a timeshare.
Yes, but a pay timeshare with a painting, right?
Did you have a chance, like if you own part of the Bitcoin, could you get to see the painting then?
We didn't get that far.
There may be a new business model for museums, right?
Maybe. See, we're still creating this
fractional ownership
of a painting or sculpture, or whatever it is, a work of art, yeah.
In a museum. It's almost, it's like being a member of a museum.
Right.
But having a specific tie to that.
To that.
You know, that Whistler's mother or something. You know, that'd be a really cool thing to do.
Right? Yeah. Well, he was thinking a whole nother situation, which, you know, we didn't really want to get involved with because the whole thing was art is not a commodity. So at that point, it may mean that it's a commodity. So there are, you know, the laws were that are in place didn't really support it. And, you know, who knows? It could have meant like with Napster. It could have meant, a whole, you know, an industry is broken wide open and now there are changes and laws that are changing. But we weren't on board for it. But at the end of the day, that's probably my best story.
The problem with Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency in general, no matter what kind it is.
Yeah.
I went to a legal conference once to help show our product and wandered around some of the talks. And there was a guy talking about the legal issues with cryptocurrency.
So many, yeah.
And the one main thing that you have to get over is that there's no title change. With fiat currency, I give you a dollar, you give me,
whatever it
is. You know, the cup of water.
Right, right.
So that as soon as I hold the cup of water, and as soon as you get the dollar, you own the dollar, I own the cup of water.
Mm-hmm.
But with cryptocurrency, we both own the cup of water and the dollar at the same time.
Wow.
So legally, it's a shared ownership because it goes in the ledger. So now we both own that, over time, and that's part of the security of cryptocurrency is knowing that these transactions existed, right?
Right.
So what happens then when it comes to an illegal transaction?
Mm.
So if I do something bad with this cup of water,
then the other person's liable
as well. Are you liable? Yeah, because you
possibly
both had title to this.
Yeah, yeah.
So your liability doesn't get
right.
You don't transfer the liability with the title.
So I guess
legally
the best case is to the fiat currency has to be there because if you want to cash out,
right? But if you don't,
releases you from that legal bind.
Right. So there's so it's more of, again, this is the regulation issue, right?
Yeah.
That we talked about earlier, right? So circle back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the the innovative thing, the Bitcoin, has to be worked out with the regulation innovation that hasn't happened yet. So we have to innovate our laws to keep up with the innovation of the technology.
Yeah.
And that's definitely not happening in this case. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem. They still don't even have all the laws related to that stuff.
Still working on it. So they're working on it. Yeah. All
right. So I only have a few more minutes left. So we have 5 minutes left. And I usually do at the end of these things, I do like a historical perspective. And because we were going to talk about sustainability a little bit, I was trying to think of a topic that's historical in nature.
Oh, okay.
So I came up, I found this, it's from the, what was it? AIP. It's a physics group. And they have a nice 8-page timeline of the discovery of global warming. And so when I started reading, I was thinking, oh, well, you know, it's going to start in 1970 or something with the, you know, the hippie movement and the Earth, Save the Earth, you know, Arbor Day and all that stuff. And no, it goes back to like 1824.
Are you serious?
So it started out with 18. So the first research actually started with Fourier, you know, the Fourier transform guy. So he's a math guy, but he was calculating that the Earth would actually be colder if it didn't have an atmosphere. So he's the first scientist to say, you know, if we don't have an atmosphere, that's what keeps the heat in, you know, having oxygen, nitrogen, and such. And then this other, Tyndall, who's famous actually for the Tyndall effect, which is why the sky is blue.
Right.
So if somebody ever asks you, why is grass green? It's chlorophyl. Why the sky is blue? It's called the Tyndall effect. It's the light refraction.
Oh, okay.
And that's why sunsets are red, because the sun is going through more atmosphere, and that diffracts the light and makes it more red.
Gotcha.
So like our sunsets in the 70s were better than sunsets in the 1200s because there was pollution. So the more particulates in there, the redder and kind of cooler the sunset looks. And so ideally you don't want to see a nice yellow sunset. That means there's no pollution.
Theoretically. You don't want to see
You want to see you don't want to see much of a transition. You want to see a little bit of a transition. Ideally.
That's good to keep in mind.
So that's just something. So that Tyndall so he was the one in 1859, he demonstrated that some gases block infrared radiation, and notes that the changes in the concentration of gases could bring up climate change. So Tyndall was the first guy to do this. Part of his work was, you know, looking at things like CO2, and he was basically using the greenhouse as an example of how, why is a greenhouse warmer in the wintertime than the surrounding air? And people thought it was, well, it's because of the glass.
Right.
And it's not the glass. It's the fact that the air inside traps the energy, and it doesn't get to send that energy out through to the other gas molecules. So it's the CO2 and the oxygen that's trapping in the gas. And so they called it greenhouse gas effect, but it was it was really called the greenhouse effect. And then once they figured out that CO2 was, you know, that it can hold much more energy than just regular oxygen, nitrogen, and then also methane is also even worse than CO2. That's when they start calling it greenhouse gases, because it's the greenhouse effect of these gases.
Gases, right.
So they're not really greenhouse gases. It's the greenhouse effect.
Right.
And so as, you know, as things happen, they shorten and change. And then now they're not even calling it warming when it's climate change, because people are like, well, the Earth got cold today because we had a blizzard. It's like, yeah, because it's oscillating out of control. I mean, we're going to have really high temperatures, then we're going to have really low temperatures.
Yeah.
I mean, Europe had like 100 degree temperatures this year, which they rarely ever get that much. Right. So that's kind of the history of global warming there. And we have about 1 minute left. So I guess any final thoughts before we go? We can always have you back for more topics. Maybe what we can do is we'll figure a way. I got to figure out. There's got to be a way to have a visual. Maybe what we do is if we get JPEGs, I'm starting to learn how to put the logo on here. So we can probably even like put pictures instead of the logo. Maybe we'll try something one day.
That would be fun. Let's try something.
Definitely have you back.
Yeah.
So,
get a little artistic. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I see David here is ready for his show. So
David's here.
He's usually my cue to wrap it up. And he knows I have it all ready to go. So So thank you, Lynn, for coming
out
to me.
You're welcome. Anytime, anytime.
Thank you to all the new fans that watch on Facebook or YouTube or listen. Thank you to the Chamber for giving me the opportunity and the platform. Mark and his team at Economic Development for their encouragement and support. The Gang Back at Zero Surge, my wife and kids. And to all the rest of you innovators out there, the original meaning of innovator was that you're a rebel. So keep rebelling against the doubters and make your ideas a reality. And make a not so... make a not so... There we go.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump says he's no longer looking at any form of tax cuts, a reversal from what he said on Tuesday.
I'm not looking at a tax cut now. We don't need it. We have a strong economy. Certainly a payroll tax cut. President Obama did that in order to artificially jack up the economy. President Obama had zero interest rates. I don't have zero interest. I have real interest rates. And despite that, I have a strong economy.
Most of the 2020 Democratic presidential field is speaking at an event sponsored by the AFL-CIO. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says he wants to double union membership without the fear of people losing their jobs over a strike.
Under our program, every union worker in America will have the right to strike.
Sanders was speaking there in Iowa. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Liberty Mutual Insurance presents...
Doug. Is that your pet Emu?
He's my partner, Limu. And we're here to tell you that Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need.
So is he only an Emu because it rhymes with Limu, as in Liberty Mutual?
Well, I won't.
So this is just a clever way to get people to remember Liberty Mutual, huh?
Kinda.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com.
Underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Equal housing insurer. State laws apply.
This is Shell Rotella Gas Truck. This is truck oil. This is hunting, fishing, camping way off the grid oil. This is climbing mountains in the rain, snow, and mud oil. This is hauling the world's greatest tailgate party halfway across the country, oil. This is not top-down cruising to the corner store for cupcakes oil. This is Shell Rotella Gas Truck, just for your truck and SUV, oil. Find Shell Rotella Gas Truck at your local Advance Auto Parts today.
The Trump administration wants to hold migrant families in detention centers for the entire duration of their immigration proceedings. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports from Washington.
Acting Homeland Security Chief Kevin McAleenan saying the current standards incentivize illegal entry. He cites a Supreme Court ruling known as the Flores Agreement, which currently limits the time families can be detained to 20 days.
This single ruling has substantially caused and continued to fuel the current family unit crisis and the unprecedented flow of Central American families and minors illegally crossing our border.
He says the proposed new rule will allow families to be detained together for longer and high standards to be implemented for the care of the families in custody.
President Trump on the road in Louisville, Kentucky, speaking to veterans. Now the president announces that he will sign an order forgiving federal student loan debt for permanently disabled veterans. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
A former VA doctor is now facing manslaughter charges. U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Arkansas, Dak Keyes, says Dr. Robert Morris Levy was often high while on duty.
The 2M2B that he used was, again, a substance, not a drug, a substance, allowed him to receive the feeling of intoxication, but it would not show up on any type of urinalysis test.
A federal grand jury indicted Levy on numerous charges on Tuesday. A Miss America pageant contestant has been reportedly disqualified for being a vocal supporter of President Trump. The now former Miss Nevada 2019, Katie Williams, says she was stripped of her title over the weekend for allegedly mixing pageant and politics. Williams took to Twitter and has a message for everyone.
But I do not apologize for who I am. I've spent so many years of my life wondering what people thought of me,
that I'm just at a point in my life where I just don't care. And so I don't apologize for what I've posted. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Because that's who I am. And if you don't like it, you don't have to follow me. You don't have to watch it. You can drive by this train wreck. I'm fine with it. So my name is Katie Williams. I am the former Miss Nevada State 2019. And I have officially been dethroned.
Williams was ordered to surrender her stash and crown and never speak of the pageant again, although she's refused to do so. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. Just like we have every Wednesday at 5 o'clock this summer, we have another exciting episode in store for you today. But first, here's your live and local weather forecast. Tonight, there is a severe thunderstorm watch, but it doesn't look like there's a guarantee of thunderstorms. It's 50-50, so stay inside and prep for possible thunderstorms. Tomorrow,